Vernon Damer, a grocer with a small store in the Kelly Settlement community outside Hattiesburg, where blacks could pay their poll tax, and an NAACP leader, was killed when his home was firebombed on January 10, 1966.
The son of Vernon Damer, Vernon Damer Jr.
On a Monday morning early at approximately 2 o'clock a.m., two carloads of Klansmen from the White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, led by Imperial Wizard Sam Bowers from Laurel, Mississippi in Jones County, arrived at my father's place. One car load stopped in front of the grocery store, which was approximately 150 to 200 feet from the house on the same side of the road, and the other car stopped in front of the residence. The Klansmen dismounted the vehicles and started firing their weapons into the picture window of the house and into the plate glass display window of the store. After breaking the windows, they proceeded to fill the house with gasoline by tossing in Molotov cocktails. My father and the family had been harassed for years, and their lives had been threatened, so he kept loaded weapons in all rooms of the house, and I witnessed that when I came through a year earlier on furlough from the Air Force. He immediately jumped from his bed, and called off for the family. He says, "We've been hit. Get up and get out of the house." And at that time, he started firing back at the Klansmen who were firing into the house, hoping to keep the family in the house and burn the entire family. So while he was firing back to keep them warded off, the other members of the family in the residence were getting out of the house through a back window. My baby sister Betty, who at that time was 10 years old, she was burned quite severely on the arms and on the forehead. My mother received minor burns. My two brothers escaped unharmed. My father came out and he was burned severely. And they all retreated to a barn in back of the house in the edge of the woods. And during the time that they were escaping from the residence, my mother hollered out and said, "Oh Lord, Aunt Rainier, who was my dad's mother's sister, is in the store burning up." Well, Aunt Rainey fortunately had escaped from the store uninjured, and she too was over in the edge of the woods by the barn, and she says, "Honey, I'm here and I'm safe." So the entire family retreated to the barn, and from there they proceeded. The Klansmen left the place, by the way, left the place when my dad started to fire back, but they'd already done that damage. And from there, my dad was transported to the hospital by his baby sister, who lived not very far away, and heard all of the commotion. And he entered the hospital soon thereafter, and he died some 12 hours later from the burns. My father had been active in the NAACP for years. And naturally, the NAACP had to do all their meetings, you know, in secrecy, to the best of their ability, because it was an organization that the white supremacists didn't appreciate, because they were afraid that one of these days they may probably get enough members and bring about a social change in the state of Mississippi. But during the early 60s, when President Johnson came in and various civil rights bills were signed, and particularly the Voting Rights Act picked up, based on my understanding, things were moving along quite well. Looked like the civil rights situation and the racial situation in Mississippi was about to change without too much bloodshed. So my father had been talking with the officials downtown about bringing the poll tax books out to his grocery store, so the local citizens in the area could come to his grocery store and pay their poll tax. Well, the voting officials approved of this, because based on what I've heard my mother say, there are lines down at the polling place where they paid the poll tax, the tax place, and consequently, they would relieve some of the congestion around that area. So that was accepted by the officials, but it was not accepted by the Klan. At that particular time, they decided, they being Sam Bowers, the head of the Klan, called a meeting of his Klansmen. He said, it is now time to eliminate the nigger down south. He's gotten too big. So he told his fellow Klansmen that we will have to do a job 3 and 4. And this is verified, by the way, in the FBI reports, because, you know, there were informants all around that had infiltrated the Klan. And so they identified who would go and do this, and they went ahead as planned and carried out their act. Now, the focus has been mainly, the focus of bringing these guys to justice and prosecuting and trying to get convictions, been mainly around the murder of my father. But my father was a businessman. He was a farmer. He had a sawmill. He had a grocery business. And he was outside of his house every day, riding in his pickup truck on the tractor. He did not restrict his activity because he had to make a living for his family. And he could have been killed alone anywhere at any day of the week. But the Klansmen didn't really want him. They wanted to send a message as far as my family is concerned. Let's just wipe out the entire family. So when they arrived in the yard at around 2 o'clock that morning and everyone was asleep, the intent was to destroy the entire family. The transcripts of Sam Bowers and some of the other Klansmen who were tried, their transcripts were destroyed. And in order to get them back and to retry them again, according to the district attorney, he would need new evidence. And we were hoping that the Sovereignty Commission files, along with other evidence that we can pick up, you know, through various means, would provide sufficient information to be successful. At this particular point in time, we're not sure of what's in the file that will bring, you know, that will aid in the investigation. But we are hoping that there's something there. And another thing, too, the files were there, and since they have been open to our family, to us, we've achieved another milestone towards closure of this horrible event in our life. When you're born in racism and you're raised in racism like we were, my dad was the father of 8 children, 7 boys and 1 girl. When you're raised in a racist society, you tend not to really feel the hurt from racism, because that's where you came into this world and that's where you've grown up. And so we kind of have a thick skin against hatred, discrimination, and those kind of things, because what? You're raised up in that environment. But what it has done to our family since my father was killed, naturally that was one of the greatest hurts that I've ever experienced and my family's ever experienced in our lifetime. Not only did we lose a father, we lost a husband, we lost a provider, we lost someone that we loved, and that was a very, very tragic thing. And we lost a home, I lost a business, and my mother had 2 small children that she had to try to raise alone without a father. And that was difficult. So we all had to pull together and pool our strengths, stick together like we were always taught to do, because we came up in a religious and a very respectful family and respectful environment. So it wasn't like we just all scattered like chickens. No, we pulled together, and we did what we had to do. At the time when my father was killed, he had 4 sons serving on active duty in the U.S. Armed Forces. And I, for one, had been in approximately 15 years. And we had to come home on furlough in uniform and bury my father, who had been killed. All because what? He wanted to vote, and he wanted to become a first-class citizen instead of continuing his life as a second-class citizen. The most fitting tribute that would thoroughly allow me to bring closure to what has happened in my family. And I feel that would put Mississippi in a different place and separate it from its terrible history, is that the state of Mississippi would exert whatever resources are required to go after those individuals in the Klan back in those days who not only killed my father, but they also killed many other black members for basically the same thing, and nothing was done, not nothing. I would like to see a task force put together at the state level with investigators to go back and look at every one of these murders and do everything within their power to bring the individuals to justice who committed these crimes. And once that is done, and it's done with all of the vigor that they can muster, the state can muster, and just do it the best that they possibly can, and whatever the outcome is, because 32 years has been a long time on my father's. We know it's difficult, you know, at this time to go out and try to get conviction, but make a real effort, you know, to try to correct this terrible wrong, and to me, that will be the crown jewel. I will be totally satisfied at that time.
Since I went down to register, it's been bloodhounds in front of my door. We being harassed, and whether I work at home or wash, the bills go high and high. Everything to put me out of rural is being done, but I'll be right there fighting for freedom until God say enough done.
At the time when my father was killed, he had four sons serving on active duty in the U.S. Armed Forces. And we had to come home on furlough in uniform and bury my father, who had been killed, all because what? He wanted to vote and he wanted to become a first-class citizen instead of continuing his life as a second-class citizen. He also wanted to see his children and grandchildren have the opportunities that the white society had here in Mississippi and be able to enjoy this life.
No jury in the state of Mississippi is going to convict a white man for killing a black, said Samuel H. Bowers, the imperial wizard of the Mississippi White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, to Billy Roy Pitts, a foot soldier in the White Knights who is presently serving time for killing Vernon Damer. Samuel H. Bowers has been tried 5 times for ordering the murder of Vernon Damer.
Michael Moore, Attorney General of Mississippi, disinters his state's most painful history and the final prosecution of Samuel H. Bowers.
This was a case that occurred, a horrible murder and arson that occurred back in January of 1966. These guys, in the middle of the night, were there to try to kill him, and Mr. Damer valiantly woke up and defended the family with a gun that he had and held off the 10 of them for some period of time until the rest of the family could get out of the house, and ended up staying in there so long that he burned up. They tried to prosecute Mr. Bowers back in those days, and unfortunately ended up with a hung jury on 3 occasions. It was a very strong effort. The proof was there. The community was behind it. But somehow the Ku Klux Klan got involved and tampered with a jury, we believe, and there was an 11-1 verdict and 2 10-2 verdicts, and I think that's as much as the folks felt like they could do. But they did get convictions on many of the others. Billy Roy Pitts, who ended up later being one of our witnesses, pled guilty back in that day, and several others were convicted, and of course others got away. But it's a case that has not been forgotten in Mississippi. We're very fortunate. I mean, I almost believe that that the Lord stepped in and helped us, because we found Billy Roy Pitts, who had left Mississippi back in the 60s and had never returned, and he came back and turned himself in, was placed in jail, and agreed to be a witness for us. And then we found a new witness, Mr. Stringer, who turned out to be a very good witness, but we didn't know about him at the time. And then actually even found another lady who had some information. So the family, the Damer family, the sons and the daughter and the mother, they just were remarkable. This was a group of people who simply asked that justice be done. Nothing more, nothing less. And their sincerity, their courage, just the genuine demeanor that they displayed to me encouraged me to take the case on. And so the local prosecutors, the investigators, everybody worked hard, put together a good case, and last week's result of Mr. Bowers being convicted, I think, made everybody proud. And people ask me also, you know, what the significance of the case is and what does this mean for Mississippi. And I first tell them that it really the case is about the Damers and about the Ku Klux Klan more than it is about our state. And what I mean by that, it's about a family who never gave up hope to get justice for their slain father and slain husband. And it took 32 years, but they fought all the way and were willing to go the last mile with us. And so it's a story of courage. It's a truly great American story. And at the time that Mr. Damer was killed, he had four sons in the armed services. They all came back in uniform for his funeral. If you take a look at that picture, it'll bring tears to your eyes. They're standing in front of the burned house and the burned cars and the burned store and the burned shop. I mean, it's everything that he had was destroyed by a bunch of cowards who had hate in their hearts. So one of the real driving things for me in this case was that if we could convict Sam Bowers, we would literally tear the heart out of the evil that existed in our state within the Ku Klux Klan during those days. And you know, this is the same guy who masterminded the killing of the three in Philadelphia and many other church bombings and murders. So I feel like the conviction of Sam Bowers is an atonement for not only the sin that was committed with Vernon Damer, but the sins that were committed all during that day. So we now have the kingpin in prison, and I don't think he'll ever see the light of day again. When we were trying the case, one of the witnesses who testified was a guy by the name of Devers Nix, and Devers Nix is a co-defendant. His trial is coming up. He was one of the kingpins of the Ku Klux Klan at that time, too. And he was asked a question, you know, what does the Klan stand for and why did you join the Klan? And he said that the Klan was a benevolent association that basically delivered fruit baskets to needy people at Christmas time and sometimes gave needy people money. The jurors that were 5 black, 1 Asian, and 6 white laughed out loud in court. All of them, black and white, laughed at Mr. Nix. And that was the most telling thing in the trial. People in this state think that the Ku Klux Klan in 1998 is basically laughable. That meanness that existed in those days may still reside in the hearts of a few people in the backwoods, but most of the people in Mississippi believe in the dignity of human life, no matter if you're black or white, Jewish, Christian, it doesn't matter. This state is very much changed place than it was in the 60s. And frankly, most of the people even back in the 60s believed that way. It's just that there were a few who created all this trouble. So I'm satisfied that it's a changed state. I mean, all you have to do is look around at the elected officials. We got more black elected officials in Mississippi than any state in the country. So to bring the circle to completion is that Vernon was killed because the Klan did not want him to aid blacks in being able to register to vote and therefore have a voice in government, but also to be able to serve on juries. And what ended up happening is 32 years later, you have a almost half and half, 50% black, 50% white jury convicting the kingpin of the Ku Klux Klan. So we really have come full circle.
What happens to a dream deferred? Daddy?
Our flag is red, white, and blue. But our nation is rainbow, red, yellow, brown, black, and white. We're all precious in God's sight.
To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct. And let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the examples of a nation whose crimes, towering up to heaven, were thrown down by the breath of the Almighty. burying that nation in irrevocable ruin. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peeled and woe-smitten people. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land?
By the rivers of Babylon, where he sat down, and there he went, when he remembers Zion.
Leroy Johnson is co-director of Southern Echo, a development, education, and training organization working to develop grassroots leadership across Mississippi and the southern region.
There's a misconception that racism is about hate, but we believe that racism is about domination and control, and that hate is a tool that is used as a part of the vehicle to oppress people. And so as we talk about race relationships in the South, and in this country, in this present day, I think the U.S. Congress is in a position where they have fostered a lot of hate and using it to help separate people, and thereby putting us in a place where it's okay to be outwardly in a position where you can harm people because of the color of their skin. Our U.S. Senator from Mississippi, who was also the majority leader of the U.S. Senate, Trent Lott, recently said that in the 50s and the 60s in Mississippi, that we were morally a better place to live. When you say that it is morally more efficient to be able to really be a segregationist society, where black folk were literally taken off the streets and drugged and hanging trees, drowned in bodies of water. We have one body of water where I live called Black Creek, and it gets the name from the number of black people who were drowned in it. So I don't know how you can be morally better off as a community and as a state when it is okay to treat a race of people the way that we were being treated in the 50s and the 60s. And so there's a wishing to get back to those types of beings where white folk could literally do what they wanted to black folk, and there was no law, there was no justice, there was just whatever they wanted to do. And so I think that we need to really think about how the leadership of this country, from the South, the leadership in the House and the Senate is from the South. And they are pushing us back and carrying us back and dragging us back to Auld Lang Syne, the state of public education in this country, and especially in the South. It's one of those things that, and I don't think it's by some unhabited type of process. I think it's one of those things that the folks figured out. You know, it made it illegal for slaves to be able to read, and it made it illegal for black folks to go to school. And so now we're in a situation where we're playing catch-up. We're a country of immigrants. We need to stop scapegoating and using this tool of hate to create a situation where folks actually dominate and control other folks.
By the rivers of Babylon, where he sat down, and there he went, when he remembers Zion.
There is an important story to be told about what happens when a government is allowed to operate in secrecy and what that does to erode the freedom of everyone.
Mississippi wasn't alone in its unconstitutional actions. J. Edgar Hoover's FBI plotted against U.S. citizens, and Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, and Florida all had state commissions to fight what Southern legislators considered integrationist plots.
But in Mississippi, one out of 37 residents were on secret lists. There is evidence of official sanction and implementation to trap, smear, fabricate, jail, and even consider murder. The record of the Sovereignty Commission must become known, and what emerges demands to be remembered and acted upon. We are still dealing with the problems of racism.
You've been listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash, engineered by Tom Ronan. Our civil rights montages were produced by Peter Beauchamp.